Welcome to the Animal Health Employment Insider, brought to you by The Vet Recruiter. In this podcast, search consultant Stacy Purcell, founder and CEO of The Vet Recruiter, provides insight and practical advice for both companies and job seekers. The Vet Recruiter's mission is to help organizations acquire top talent while helping professionals attain career-enhancing opportunities that increase their quality of life. In today's podcast, we'll be talking about how job seekers can make themselves top candidates for jobs in the market. Hello, Stacy.
Hello, Sharita. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you've worked with a lot of professionals during your career as a recruiter. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. I have worked with thousands of professionals over the years, and I've seen many of them try to position themselves as a top candidate during the hiring process.
Do you believe that professionals have a firm grasp of what it takes to be a top candidate?
I would have to say overall that they don't. Unfortunately, some candidates assume that they're a top candidate when they really aren't. Others don't approach their job search or the hiring process in the correct fashion and they misrepresent themselves. Others don't do a good job of promoting their candidacy or emphasizing what makes them a great candidate.
It seems like it's a complicated process.
Actually, it isn't that complicated, and that's because employers all basically look for the same things when they hire people. While everybody brings different strengths to the table and suffers from different weaknesses, the motivations for hiring officials remains constant. In fact, there are three main reasons why a hiring official would make you an offer of employment. Number one, they believe that you're going to make the company money. Two, they believe that you're going to save the company money. Or three, they believe that you're going to add value to the company. Of course, the best case scenario from the employer's perspective is that you would accomplish all three things once you become an employee.
Okay, if this is the case, what can job seekers do to position themselves better during the hiring process?
They should take their past accomplishments and tie them to the three points I just mentioned. They should do this both in their resume and then during the face-to-face interview. Specifically, if you're a candidate, you should show three things. Number one, how you have made your current and past employers money. Two, how you saved your current and past employers money. And three, the value that you added to your current and past employers. When you do this, you have to remember to use specific examples with quantifiable data. For example, what exactly did you do to make what amount of profit for a company? What exactly did you do to save a certain amount of money?
Okay, so you're saying that if a professional focuses on those three things and can tie their past accomplishments to those things, it makes them a top candidate?
Actually, it's just the first step. That's what gets you in the door. There's a lot more that's involved.
Okay, so what else is involved?
Well, as I said at the top of the podcast, there's often a disconnect between what candidates believe they have to offer and what employers believe they have to offer. That's because candidates overestimate what they have in the way of skills, experience, and expertise. Let's say that as a candidate, you have demonstrated a history of making your employer's money, saving them money, and adding value. Even if that is the case, there is a chance that other candidates in the process have also demonstrated that history. I tell professionals all of the time that they're not applying for a job in a vacuum. They're competing against other people, and there has to be a way for hiring managers to choose between them. At the end of the day, only one person receives an offer of employment.
So, how do hiring managers actually make that determination?
Well, there are three things that a professional needs if they want to be considered a top candidate by a hiring manager. The first one deals with skills. A professional should have, at minimum, 80 to 85% of the skills required for the position. Obviously, 100% would be better. However, sometimes a top candidate is hired with less than 100%. It depends on the situation and what else they bring to the table in terms of their candidacy. Think of it this way. If the job description includes a list of core skills, you should not be missing any more than one of those skills. If you're missing two or more of those core skills, then you will not be considered a top candidate, no matter what else you have done.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, what about the second factor?
Well, second, the candidate must be willing to accept a salary in the range offered by the company. Now, I will say that landing a new job does sometimes bring with it a bump in salary and other compensation. In fact, that happens quite often, especially for top candidates. However, the employer is not going to hand a candidate, even a top candidate, a blank check. The employer starts the search with a salary range. Yes, they're willing to pay a top candidate at the upper part of that range, but if a candidate attempts to land a salary that's far out of the upper part of the range, that rarely flies. Sometimes a company will pay a top candidate more than the range they set, but it's the exception rather than the rule. And if you're asking for a salary at the upper part of the range, you better be close to having 100% of the skills required for the position. Strangely enough, money also plays a part in the third factor.
What is the third factor?
Well, the third factor is that the candidate must be motivated by something other than money.
By something other than money? Okay, I thought we just discussed candidates attempting to get a salary, you know, above the accepted range.
Well, that is true, but we're talking about their main motivation for wanting a new job, and that's an important distinction. First, though, let's talk about why making money your primary motivator can be bad in the eyes of a hiring manager. If your primary motivation for doing something is money, then you will go wherever there is more money. That means in a hiring situation, you're a hiring risk for accepting a counteroffer from your current employer. When it comes to the risk of a candidate accepting a counteroffer, employers want to eliminate that risk altogether. If a hiring manager thinks that you might accept a counteroffer, then they probably will not consider you a top candidate.
So a candidate's main motivation for wanting to change jobs is very important, not just for them, but also for the organization that might hire them?
Yes, that's correct. And that's because when you get right down to it, a top candidate to an employer is not just a candidate that measures up in every way. It's a candidate who will accept their offer of employment and actually come to work for them.
Okay, so now that we've talked about what professionals should do to stand out as a top candidate, are there things that they shouldn't do?
Yes, there are plenty of things that they should not do. Unfortunately, I've seen candidates commit some of the same mistakes over and over.
What are some of those mistakes?
Well, if a recruiter reaches out to a candidate about a new opportunity, the candidate should work with the recruiter and not try to go around them. Candidates sometimes think to themselves, if I could only speak directly with the hiring manager, I could convince them of what a great candidate I am. But this is misguided thinking. I have an example of this. A while back, a candidate called the hiring manager of one of my clients on their cell phone after business hours. The hiring manager was not happy about this. In fact, he called me and said he was not going to consider the person anymore for the position. You have to remember that companies rely heavily on the judgment of the search consultants that they hire. If you go around the search consultant and the client trusts that individual, but you contact the client yourself, you will likely not be considered for the position. Not only that, but the recruiter will also take you off their list of candidates to contact for future opportunities. So it doesn't matter how many skills you have or how much experience you have. If you make mistakes like this, you won't be considered a top candidate, and you probably won't be considered a candidate at all in the future.
Okay, so what other mistakes do professionals make that hurt their candidacy?
Well, candidates make mistakes during the interview process that can do a lot of damage. I once had a candidate who interviewed with one of my clients only because he wanted to take his wife on a trip to see New York City. Obviously, I did not know this before he flew to New York for the interview, and needless to say, I was not happy when I found this out, and neither was my client. Doing something like that damages your reputation, and you'll never know when it might come back to bite you. I had another candidate who flew to one of my clients for an interview. When he flew back, he had a $200 dinner at a restaurant that was in his hometown. Then he tried to get my client to pay for it. He put that on his expense report. And that kind of behavior is unacceptable. And if you expect to be considered a top candidate for any position, you cannot engage in behavior like this. The interview stage can make or break you. And I look forward to talking about the face-to-face interview in an upcoming podcast.
Okay, Stacy, thanks so much for all of this great information today. I look forward to talking about the interview stage as well.
Thank you, Sharita.